See, I'd rather hustle for 80 hours a week than work for somebody else 40 hours a week. I mean, the stress of not knowing where the next dollar's coming from is a motivator. Being in LA, to me, seeing, you know, coming from Milwaukee, some people have money, but it's very conservative money there. You might have a big house and nice stuff in the house, but people that really don't want it there. Out here, it's flaunted, and you either are motivated by that or totally turned off. And I'm motivated, so I love seeing that. That drives me. That's, I mean, obviously being successful and all the stress has got to be, you know, it's got to be some payoff.
You are listening to Hooked on Startups, where every week you'll hear from some of the most talented, inspiring, and successful entrepreneurs who share their real-life stories, how they overcame challenges and failures, and how they mastered success. Get ready for some of the best business tips, tricks and tactics, and some frank, unscripted discussions. Here's your host, Matthew Sullivan.
Today on Hooked on Startups, I am joined by none other than Rob Kessler of Million Dollar Collar. Rob, welcome to the show.
How you doing, Matthew? Great to see you.
Let me tell you a bit about Rob. So Rob, you are the founder, CEO, and chief inventor at Million Dollar Collar.
I am.
And before that, you were the founder and CEO of NEWD Clothing, which stands for Nothing Else Will Do. Which is
New Clothing. I thought it was a good, fun name.
It's a brilliant name. You know, it's like nudie. It's like nude. It's fantastic.
Nude Clothing.
I think that started as a screen printing business in your spare bedroom and grew to a multi-million dollar business. So I want to hear all about that. You've been involved in diamond trading, in real estate, and most recently you moved from Milwaukee to Los Angeles to build the Million Dollar Collar business. That's you know, so what else have you been doing? I mean, you know...
I've done quite a bit. I think I always say I sold the three biggest things most people will ever buy: houses, diamonds, and cars. And now I sell like the least expensive thing that he'll buy other than a stick of gum.
Now I want to hear all about placotitis and how you have discovered the global cure for that little known disease, placotitis.
Right. So the part of the dress shirt here with the buttons and the holes is called the placket, which most people don't know. Which is why we're called Million Dollar Collar and not Perfect Placket, because I would just start off with a, what the heck is a placket thing? So yeah, we called it placotitis because no one's immune. Doesn't matter if you have a $15 shirt or a $150 shirt. There's just no shirt has enough reinforcement in this part to hold up the weight of the collar. So after looking at my wedding photos, and I look like a total beach bum instead of, you know, the Thomas Crown cool that I wanted to be, I came home and saw that there was really no reinforcement for this part of the shirt. So I started with the idea of a collar stay and kind of designed something to go down the front of the shirt.
But you do realize what's happened in these last few seconds is you've just created a massive problem for anybody that wears a shirt that was not aware of placotitis. So let me just, you know, so this here, this is what happens when you put a shirt on and you go out, you know, you get all sort of bunched up here and your collar collapses. And, you know, as you say, you look like some sort of beach bum, as opposed to you. So when the camera zooms into you, you will see this perfect sort of V shape.
Well, and that's what we say, you know, this part of the shirt frames the face. I mean, it really draws your attention up, but if it's like this, you know, it just looks sloppy and it's not going to draw the attention up to the face. I mean, nobody really cares about the shirt. They're looking at the person and your clothing talks to you, for you. So we really wanted, you know, to me, it makes a big deal. I mean, even before when I would go out at night, you put on a dress shirt because you want to look good. But if the dress shirt looks like crap because it's folding and sloppy, it just doesn't give you the presence that you want. You know, you get confidence when you feel good, you know, when you look good. So when you look good, you feel good.
But the problem is that, I mean, this is quite an expensive shirt. I mean, even though I did get it at a discount, of course. But now I'm looking at all of my shirts. You just think they just look terrible. So that must have been a really amazing moment when you thought, hang on, you know, this is a real problem for people. And there must be a solution.
Yeah. I mean, when I had friends start telling me, thank you for making me acutely aware of a problem I never knew I had, I knew I was onto something. I mean, it's one of those things. You don't really notice it. I mean, maybe you tug at your shirt a little bit during the day, but you don't think about it because you just always done it. But once you see a shirt that sits right and you don't have to do anything, and you can do jumpy jacks and backflips if you want to, you'll start to notice it on yourself and everybody else. So yeah, you'll be acutely aware of plakatitis.
So your background is in fashion. I mean, you started Nude or NEWD back in, was it 06, something like that?
Yeah.
So that was...
were really hot at that point, so I wanted to partner with artists to come up with cool graphic t-shirts. So instead of having to sell like $1,000 painting, they could take that image, put it on a t-shirt, and we would do like a short run, you know, limited edition shirts.
And there's and I remember seeing the videos that explain what the company was, and it really was a specialist company that where each of these shirts was handmade and hand printed, and so they're almost like a limited edition set of prints but on a t-shirt. Yeah. Rather than so obviously that grew very well, but so you left what was a multi-million dollar business.
And yeah, it was doing well.
so logically tour me through this. So you've got this whole thing and you decided in true entrepreneur style, okay, this is going too well. It's making too much money.
Comfortable. Way too comfortable.
You know, way too comfortable. So let's blow it all up. Let's bet everything on black. And I've come up with this crazy idea. So what could possibly go wrong? So
right. Well, so I was just working on $1 million collar while I had Nude. So, you know, I kept thinking about it. I'd work on it when I had a chance, but I also have my better half that said, dude, I can't live in Milwaukee, Wisconsin anymore. We need to move. Let's make a decision. We came to LA for her 30th birthday. I brought her out here and we had a great time. And we decided that this is where we wanted to live. It was kind of either, she's in fitness, so it was either kind of New York or LA. And we weren't really getting out of the winter by going to New York. So we decided to come here, and 363 days after her birthday, we said we're going to leave Milwaukee by your 31st birthday, and we left a few days before that and moved out here.
And I sold everything.
Sold the house, sold the car, sold a boat. Like, we sold everything we had, furniture, everything. If it didn't fit in my F-150 pickup truck, we didn't bring it.
So. And I guess, but the driver behind that, is it because you had the challenge of setting up the all these businesses? And do you find that you get to a point where you go, yeah, okay, this is okay, but I don't want to be doing this for the rest of my life. Where's the challenge? I want this something new. And is that what the $1 million collar idea gave you?
I think there's something about being the beginning, starting it. You know, growing it's great, and getting to a point where it's comfortable is fine. But the growth and trying to figure it out, to me, is what's exciting. It changes the day. You know, the added stress makes you focus harder and work harder. And I think that's the part of just starting a new business that is exciting to me.
Because this really was starting from a blank sheet of paper. It was an idea. I mean, there are other collar stiffener technologies out there, which are, you know, mainly involve sort of large mechanical devices that you wear on your shoulders. It's like something out of the Victorian age.
Yeah.
So did you find that, hang on, you know, you got this idea and it's really using every ounce of your creative and entrepreneurial abilities to get it off the ground. So what were the moments where you go, hang on, this is like going to be the biggest mistake of my life?
Well, you know, starting a new product in a new category is always challenging. You know, I didn't really have anything to go on. And one of the things that we found the most challenging is, what do you buy one place on a website and then you get, and you have to go take it somewhere else to get installed just so that you can use it. And so we have this really challenging two-step process to even sell the product in the beginning, you know, to begin with. So that was definitely a challenge.
Can you describe what the product is? I mean, obviously, because there's the people, you know, watching the video, but for those on the podcast.
Here's what it is. It comes as a set. This is one shirt's worth because there's two plackets. So it's basically like a collar stay, except it's quite a bit longer. It's got this little hook on the end. And so what happens is you call your tailor or dry cleaner, and they open up these couple stitches. If you can see that. Every shirt's made exactly the same. So then they slide this in between the layers of the placket so that the little hook hits under the buttonhole, and then they sew it back together right to the top. And that's what it is. It just sits in there, sits in between the shirt, and gives the reinforcement that you need.
And the materials. So I read somewhere that you destroyed 100 dress shirts trying to figure out how this works. I mean, but how do you come up with a material? I mean, how do you start the process? Because there's all sorts of people have business ideas where they need to come up with something that appears to be very simple, like a collar stiffener, but you need the material that can go through dry cleaning and washing machines and sunlight, rain, sun, you know, shine. What challenges did you face in finding the right material?
Well, I didn't take 10,000 things that didn't work, like Thomas Edison and the light bulb, but I found 99 things that didn't work. And I just started with stuff around my house. I mean, actually the very first thing I did was cut open a very thin cardboard box, cut open a shirt and showed it to my new wife and said, "This is what I'm talking about." And she instantly got it. So obviously cardboard's not going to make it through washing and drying. So that was just to kind of show the concept. So, I mean, I found everything plastic around the house.
No cardboard. Cardboard could be quite good. Think of the repeat business though.
I literally was cutting open mini blinds and milk cartons and zip ties. And I tested every plastic that was on the market, high temperature, everything, and nothing could withstand dry cleaning.
So if we go to your house, will we see little slivers of stuff cut out of everything? You know.
Yeah, someday I'll have a display of like the 100 different styles.
And all your blinds have bits missing and your curtains have bits missing.
You know, you take one shirt and be like, "Oh, it fits in this shirt perfect." And then you take it to the next shirt and like not even close.
You have that challenge. So first of all, you're thinking, well, this is a great idea. Do you then find yourself going, "Well, hang on, you know, is this actually going to work?" And did you get the people behind the scenes going, "You know, Rob, you're kind of crazy here. You've just sold this business. What are you thinking?" So how do you come over that? How do you get over that feeling that, hang on, I'm never going to find the right material? These dry cleaners are from hell.
Fortunately, the whole R&D was happening while I still had Nude. So I hadn't burned the bridges quite yet, but I did not have a patent when we had left Milwaukee. So that was one thing that was really up in the air. We actually took 10 days to move across the country so we could kind of see it. I mean, when are you ever going to fly to go see, you know, Mount Rushmore? So we're like, "Oh, we'll stop at all the kind of cool stuff on the way out." And on that 10-day drive, not only was it my wife's birthday, but we got the call that the patent was approved. Wonderful. On the 10-day drive out to Los Angeles. There was definitely a lot of times because, you know, not only is there 10,000 dress shirt manufacturers or more all trying to put a little spin on their shirts that looks different. You know, I had to have something that would fit into virtually every shirt. It was just a lot of, you know, little things that you wouldn't think about that would, you know, you'd think would be, this is pretty easy. And when people get it, they're like, "Oh, $2 for a piece of plastic? This is not a piece of plastic. This is so highly engineered. You know, we developed the material. It's 100% made in America and it will last the life of the shirt. So for $2, it goes in once and stays forever. You never have to think about it again." To me, it's a really, really good value once it comes down to it, to, you know, 5 or 10 cents every time you actually wear a shirt.
It's getting an understanding of just the enormous amount of work that goes behind coming up with something that is actually a very simple idea. You know, it seems simple. It's like a light bulb. It's like, you know.
Yeah. Make it look like nothing, but it's, you've thought of every little possible detail.
And what happened when you came up with the idea and you thought, hang on, the only way that I'm going to get these collar, you know, the cure for placentitis, I'm going to need an army of people to install these because is that a real roadblock? Was that a deal breaker for the idea, or how did you come up with a solution for that two-stage process where someone else needs to actually put in the shirt?
Well, every order comes with very strict instructions, which it's really only 3 steps. Like I said, you open the hem, slide it in, you sew it back together. But a seamstress that's never seen this before doesn't think they can sew through it. They don't think that this will work, that it'll ruin the shirt. There's just a lot of questions. So yeah, that was a huge challenge. And we actually, after we got the patents, so January of 2016, we went right to the manufacturers and said, "Hey, why don't we license you this technology and you can just put it in during production and we don't have to deal with this at all." Unfortunately, dress shirts are very inexpensive to make. And even by charging a nominal fee for this, it would add too high of a cost to them. So they thought it was a good idea, but they just weren't sure if people really were into it quite yet. So we said, kind of had to re-gear and retool and say, all right, we're going to have to go to the end user and get them to buy it, which, you know, now 19 months in, we've sold 92,000 sets.
Wow.
Yeah. So people are going through that pain in the ass process to get it and then find an installer 92,000 times.
I mean, that's huge. I mean, that's, and then you get the real momentum is when, you know, it becomes sort of mainstream. And I think what happens then is that you'll probably get the shirt manufacturers contacting you.
Yeah, but hopefully that.
What sort of insights did you get? I know you've been in the t-shirt business, but you know, getting involved in sort of slightly more complex pieces of clothing, did you find that the manufacturing processes were modern or Victorian, or what sort of strange things did you uncover that you wouldn't have expected when you started talking to these dress shirt manufacturers?
I think it's a pretty old process. I mean, probably 90 or 95% of shirts come out of one or two factories. So it's pretty streamlined as far as, you know, what the manufacturing process is, which was to our advantage. I mean, every shirt has two layers in the collar band and two layers in the placket because, you know, because there's buttons and holes that are tugging, there has to be two layers or one layer of fabric would just shred. So there's always at least two layers. This shirt even has, I think, three layers on this side because it's kind of got the hidden deal. So fortunately, because they're all about the same, that helped our process. But we actually did a Kickstarter a couple of years ago where we were selling our own shirt. We were trying to offer, you know, this new technology in a shirt. We didn't get to our goal, which actually ended up being a really great thing for us because I didn't want to stock, you know, tens of thousands of dress shirts in my little apartment.
Yes.
But what the feedback we got from the Kickstarter was, why are you trying to compete and why can't I just upgrade the shirts I already own? I mean, when it comes to a shirt, you really know what fits, what makes you feel good. And to go buy something online that you've never tried on before is a really tough ask, especially at a $60, $70, $80 price point. So yeah, we just really wanted to allow people to take the shirt they already have and make it a little bit better. So the feedback that we've gotten from the people that have actually gone through the pain in the ass and figured it out, and they just love it, man. They just won't wear a shirt without it anymore. So,
and that's, I mean, and the feedback that you got from Kickstarter, I mean, it's really interesting to hear that because, as you say, even though you didn't hit the figure that you were looking for, the crowd, the information that you got, the feedback, yeah. How critical was that in changing your overall direction?
Well, there, a couple things came from it. One, we had done pre-production shirts, so I understood the manufacturing process. So I know that to add this in during production is only literally barely adding one step. When they're about to attach the collar band to the shirt, they just slide it in and sew on as normal because the stitches are what holds it in place. So we know that when we get to manufacturing, it's not going to be a big deal. We have a few small brands that are talking about installing it now, so we're working on those details. But again, after the Kickstarter, and we didn't get to that goal, it was our first, you know, pivot of, yeah, okay, we're not going to make shirts. Now what do we do? How do we make this so that it goes in? Because the design, this was not the design that was at Kickstarter.
Yeah.
There was like a whole anti-roll tab and all this other stuff on the bottom that wouldn't, you know, this had to be thin so it could slide down in between the buttons and the hole, you know, and the edge of the shirt. So the design changed. We almost went back to the drawing board after the Kickstarter, but it ended up being, you know, the right move for us. I mean, we saved a fortune. I mean, we were looking for $40,000. It would have taken all 40,000 would have been to make shirts.
Yeah.
And that would have been, you know, a ton of shirts.
So effectively what the Kickstarter campaign did is give you this crowdsourced intelligence, which enabled you to create something that was much simpler, but much more scalable ultimately.
Right. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, 100 million dress shirts are sold every year worldwide. So why try to sell 10,000 shirts when I can sell to all 100 million shirts? I mean, it just didn't make any sense.
And now that you've actually created this thing and you have the patent, are you afraid of competitors coming in and, you know, people stealing your idea and infringing your copyright? And how do you deal with those sorts of tensions or those pressures on the business?
You know, I'm always fearful, you know, but I guess if I did it right from the beginning, we spent 2.5 years making sure the material is right. I mean, some knockoff's going to come around and is going to ruin somebody's shirt because the plastic's going to melt to the fabric. And so that's going to be on them. Anybody that infringes, I mean, we have a worldwide patent. So what I found out in the patent process, not only is it insanely more expensive than you think it's going to be.
Yeah.
It's another source of, it's going to be another revenue source for us. So as people infringe and they get sued, they're going to owe us money. And hopefully that patent will eventually pay for itself and generate income for the company, which I never really understood before doing this patent. So,
but I think another way of actually combating that is, I mean, it's a great name that you have, which is Million Dollar Collar. But also, did you find that in order to sell this, you had to create a really successful social media campaign, which is different to what you had to do with NEWD?
Yeah, I mean, it's branding is all across the board, from the name to the recognition and the presence on social media. I mean, it's going to be pretty hard for somebody to come in now at this point and say, oh, we have this, or we were the first, or we did that. And we've got, like I said, we're coming up on 100,000 sets sold. I think we're at 15 or 16,000 subscribers on, you know, Facebook and Instagram. So we have a definite social footprint that would be hard to combat.
And how did you have that knowledge and experience before you started the company? Or is that something that you had to learn in pretty short order to make sure that you created that marketing momentum?
Always learning. My partner, Steve, who's in Madison, Wisconsin, actually does a lot of the technical, you know, social media, website. He does a lot of that stuff. He's very, you know, graphically, he's really good. So I'm kind of the, I can see the long distance. I always think 5, 6, 7 steps ahead. And even my wife is like, dude, why are you talking about this? That is so far down the road. But you kind of always have to have those steps in the back of your mind so that the decision you make today will, you know, be towards the decisions and the stuff that you're aiming towards later. Because if you're doing this thing over here and it doesn't line up with what you want to do later, you're just going to have to scramble later and get that figured out. So,
I mean, can you share any exactly? Yeah. I mean, and I'd love to know, is there parts of this bigger vision that you can share?
Well, yeah, I mean, so we did the end user, we focused on those customers, the real two-step installation process. Right now, our focus is shifting a little bit towards the installers. So we're talking to the 40,000 dry cleaners in North America, the 100,000 tailors. I mean, the numbers are just so overwhelming, but that's where the focus is. And we will soon be redirecting traffic, at least in North America, from our website right into dry cleaners. So it'll be a one-step process for our customers, because ultimately, we want to make it as easy as possible for the person that wants their shirt to look great.
So I guess it'll be the dry cleaning equivalent of, would you like fries with that?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess that, you know, every shirt would automatically be offered an upgrade. And I think that's a brilliant idea, because it's a great marketing strategy or a marketing tool for dry cleaners to differentiate themselves from other dry cleaners, or, you know, for tailors to become, it's a new product for them to sell. So,
well, yeah, I mean, it's a really old industry, dry cleaning. I mean, obviously there's evolution with, green chemicals and things like that, but overall, the industry is it's kind of older. So to have new technology come in, we actually did a dry cleaning trade show.
Yeah. Wow. Okay.
We got great response. I mean, everybody was like, yeah, we're always looking for ways to, for upsells and ways to get our customers to stay loyal. So what we see this is a really great loyalty program. You go back to the same person, you know that they know how to install it. You know, the guy that's dry cleaning their shirt cares about the way they look. They probably have the higher end of shirts, 30, 40, 50, 80, 100 shirts in their closet, you know, not some guys that have 5 or 10 shirts. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but that customer has more shirts. So once they get it in one, you know, they're going to want it in every single shirt. So it's a great, you know, ongoing thing for the dry cleaner, and there's a constant rotation of inventory. So.
And did you find that a lot of these things, like the business model grew, so the more you got involved, it was like this inverted pyramid where you start off with this idea, this germ of an idea, on a beach as you were complaining about your shirt. And here you are 100,000 units later.
Yeah.
I mean, what are the plans? How are you going to scale this? Do you see this as being, do you see yourself being part of every person's shirt in 5, 10 years time?
No, I mean, obviously, for it to grow, I have to hand things off. And that's always a challenge. I mean, any business owner will tell you that, you know, when you start out, it's usually just you or you and a partner. I mean, I still do all the financials, and I'm learning all the Facebook ads, and I do all that stuff. hopefully you can find somebody who is 80% as passionate and as detailed as you are to fill that role. And you just have to kind of train them the best you can and deal with 80%. If you get somebody greater, it's even better. But my goal in this always, especially after we had those manufacturing meetings, was the dry cleaners were going to be where our growth really, really happened. That's where I want to focus.
And does this feel different to the other businesses? So you were very successful in real estate sales. You were involved in the family diamond business. And we talked about the t-shirt business. Does this feel like, hang on, you know, I've really got something here?
Well, the challenge is that I've always been in a relationship style business. I mean, if you're going to buy a $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, $10,000 diamond from somebody, you better feel comfortable with who you're talking to. Same with a house. I mean, you're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars or millions of dollars. You know, I'm protecting you in this deal. You need to make sure that I can trust you. So I've always been in a relationship, and that's the hardest thing. I think we're so digital. I mean, I don't really sell face to face. I sell online. And so my customer follow up, anybody ever has a problem, you know, we're answering emails and Facebook messages as quickly as we possibly can, because you have to have some kind of, you know, connection between your customer and you, even though it's digital.
Yes.
That's been the biggest challenge I think that I've dealt with is, you know, I can't talk to everybody and I can't be there to install every shirt. And sometimes things go wrong and the post office loses, you know, a package or something. I just can't do everything, which is unfortunate.
And do you think that was one of the hardest? Is that something that's ongoing? Do you think that's going to be a difficulty, or is that just a case of you saying, come on, you know, this comes with the territory?
Yeah, I have to kind of let go. But to me, I think if I can get my systems a little bit better, I can get a few more things in place. I can be a little bit more upfront about the communication and let people know that maybe things might happen. Then maybe I can, you know, pre-fix problems before they happen. So try to minimize the people that have issues. I'm always thinking about how we do that. So,
what would you say would be the best moment? If that was one of the big challenges, what was one of the biggest, one of the best moments of the business so far?
I think the feedback has been, you know, the most positive. That's what keeps me going. You know, you hear people that say, I love it. And, you know, the positive feedback that we get, you know, we put it up on Amazon a little over a year ago and we never promoted it. We just kind of put it there as an option. And we're in the top like 0.1% of clothing products sold on Amazon without really even trying. So people are seeing it, they're figuring it out, they understand what it is. It's exciting. I mean, you know, we're looking at many different opportunities and, you know, we've sold in 83 countries, which I never thought I would have this like international, you know, business. And we have people contacting us constantly to be our distributors internationally. And so the fact that people believe so much in it that they're contacting us, that's pretty awesome.
And what are the biggest sort of growth challenges that you think that you're facing now?
It's customer, you know, awareness and understanding. You know, before we met, you didn't even know that it was a problem. And now
now, thank you. Thank you for just, you know, ruining all my shirts. Yeah.
So I think it's just, you know, it's a balance of ongoing customer education. So Facebook ads and Instagram, just staying in front of people, you know, and then having the support for the other people that are going to end up doing the distribution for us. So.
And what do you find? Well, is there anything that you thought, oh my God, I'm going to have to learn this pretty quick? Or is there something that came out of the woodwork that you never expected? Is there like something that completely surprised you about this business?
The whole thing is.
That's right. This is. I mean, who would have thought, you know, like 5 years ago, you know, say, hey, Rob, guess what? In a few years' time, you're going to be, you will have invented this plastic thing and you will become, you know, you'll be living in some mansion in LA somewhere funded by billions of dollars that you've generated from completely, you know, disrupting the shirt industry. So,
I would definitely love to have that knowledge that I've disrupted the industry. I mean, that's my long-term, you know, bigger vision goal is that, you know, I look at big changes in dress shirts and you know, the collar stay was invented in like the 1880s and then it was non-iron in the 1950s. And there really hasn't been a huge shift, paradigm shift in dress shirts. And I vision myself, you know, as this company as being that, and that's what we're trying to do. We want to be in every shirt. We want to be in all this production at some point. It's just a matter of, you know, taking the steps necessary to get there.
And I think this is an amazing story, really, of just finding a problem in something that is that you wear every day, or that is staring you in the face every day, seeing the problem for what it is and coming up with a solution. So there are so many entrepreneurs who think that you need to create some amazing technology, or the next Airbnb, or the next Uber. But really, I mean, you're getting enormous growing success from just finding a solution to a problem that 100 million people have, you know, over and over again every year. So what advice would you give to entrepreneurs who are trying to find something to do?
I think the next fix is right in front of you. I mean, just like this, it was like, I would always just go out and, you know, you just find yourself constantly doing this. And then on the biggest day of my life, my wedding photos, I feel like I look like a bum. And so it was like, that was kind of the last straw. And so I just started doing the research. And I think some people maybe get a little too ahead of themselves. So I did as much Googling and internet searching as I could to see if anything even existed, which I found nothing. Then it was doing a patent search to see, you know, you can get on USPTO and do a little bit of digging, but you really want to pay someone to do that. So the first risk came in like a $2,000 patent search to say, all right, what do you find that may be buried that we don't know about? And then it's just kind of taking it step by step. I mean, try not to get too far ahead of yourself, but the goal, you know, the patents, the multi-million dollar, the game changers, they're all sitting right in front of you. It's just a matter of, you know, what do you do in your life that's annoying or could be done easier? I mean, I sit in a car or I sit somewhere and I'm like, if this button was here or this was over here, I just feel like it would be easier and it would be more ergonomic. And I always kind of think about things in an ergonomic type of way. And how does my life, how can I make it easier? Where should this be so that it fits easier? So,
and that, is it something that you've always had? Is that awareness, that looking at things slightly sideways or from a slightly different perspective, is that something you feel that you've had always, or is it something that you sort of develop as you become more self-sufficient as an entrepreneur?
No, I think I've always had it. It's just a matter of following through. I mean, this is the first patent I've followed through all the way. I mean, my wife and I, we always say we burned the ships. I mean, sold everything, moved out here, did everything with no safety net. So yeah, it's something that I noticed, but I have a buddy that invented, he used to put in windshields in semi-trucks. Well, yes. They're way up high, they're painted. He helped build the arm that helps put those in. I mean, it was like, this is my job every day. Why is it so difficult? He helped develop the thing that, you know, like a hydraulic arm that helps put them in. I mean, and he made a fortune off of it. So
I think that's such a, you know, valuable piece of advice there, really, that, as you said earlier, that the solution or the next, you know, $1 million deal is probably staring you in the face.
Yeah.
So it's almost, the advice to entrepreneurs is just to learn to get out of your own way.
Yeah. I mean, there's something that in your life that is so much more complicated than it needs to be. And to find an easier way, a solution to that, that could be it. That could be the next thing.
And I'm really excited just for you, because I can see that if you can tap into these dry cleaners and the tailors and all of these other industries, because you're giving them something that reignites their business. So that, you know, that idea of scale must keep you awake at night with excitement.
Well, yeah. I mean, I want to pay for their, I want to pay their lease payment. You know, I want to take a little bit of stress off of their plate. I mean, and going in with that positive attitude, and it's not about me. I mean, I'm making pennies compared to what these guys make, you know, installing. So it's really in their benefit. So it's kind of a cool place to be, where I'm not just trying to sell a product that, you know, maybe they might sell. I mean, it's in demand if they just need to educate their customers about it. So that's been really challenging, trying to get the message across. How do we get it to as many people as possible? Which is why the dry cleaners are the way to go. I mean, the small dry cleaners will do 200 dress shirts a day.
Wow.
And there's 40,000 in North America. So,
okay. I think you run out of zeros on the calculator pretty quickly doing that.
Right. Yeah. So the scale of it on the dry cleaning and the installation side, just in the US, is crazy. So once it goes international, I mean, it's.
Well, that's fantastic. Well, I can just see it just growing and growing. So, you know, you must, like, you know, what do they say? Be careful what you wish for.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty interesting when people offer to invest in your company and you're not even asking for it.
It's like when you're crying in your beer because of the Kickstarter campaign, and now a year later, you're turning people away. You know, where were you when I needed you?
Yeah, can I give you money? I want to be a part of this. I'm like, I want to do it on my own. But thank you. I think that is
the ultimate pleasure, isn't it? So turning down money.
Yeah, right. Yeah, with the bar, 8 years ago when I needed a beer at the bar, I couldn't get a friend to buy me a beer. But now I got people offering to invest a couple hundred grand in me. It's like really mind blowing.
Yeah, but it's probably always a good idea to remain nice to them just in case.
Yeah.
I'm like, so advice to entrepreneurs, if you're making loads of money and people offer you money, be polite when you turn it down. You never know.
Right.
But now, Rob, is the time for the questionnaire. So this is a questionnaire that I've adapted from the fabulous James Lipton from Inside the Actor's Studio. And I think he used it from a French talk show host called Bernard Pivot. So I have 10 questions for you. The first question is, what is your favorite word?
My favorite word in business is probably collaborate. I know in this world I can't do it alone. And so I try to surround myself with people that can help me, because I know I don't have all the answers, but I also want to give back as more than I get. I mean, I think that's why my screen printing business was successful. I never wanted to be a screen printer, but I just gave a better product, better delivery, better presentation. I just did it better because I know that you give more, you get more. So, brilliant. And that, to me, that's part of collaboration. It's just, you ask me for something and I'm going to give you more than you ask for.
Fabulous. And what is your least favorite word?
Least favorite word? Man, I don't know. Mine.
Well, I guess, which is the opposite of collaboration.
Yeah. Me, mine, I always say, my buddy told me this one time, there's a guy that would just, the guy that just talks about himself, and he would call them me monsters. Me. I mean, that just drives me nuts. It's just the biggest turnoff when you're talking to somebody like, oh, look what I did. Oh, me here, me this, I got that, I do that.
We used to call them eye specialists.
There you go.
So what are you most excited about right now?
The dry cleaning growth that the company is at. We've hired an employee now. We just did the show. We're about to do another dry cleaning show. So the follow-up that we're hearing, even though the show was 2 months ago, we're calling people like, oh, yeah, I meant to get to you. And I've just had this and that. They remember us and they know who we are, and it's not like cold calling. So that's pretty awesome.
And what turns you off right now?
What turns me off? Amazon. They're so difficult to work with. It just would be so much easier. It's almost like they don't care about sellers that much, but it just drives me crazy when all the stuff I have to deal with Amazon. They have the greatest thing when you're a buyer and you're, a shopper, but it takes so much of my energy to just put my products online on their website and sell them. And now we've expanded into Canada and Europe, and we're looking at Japan and Brazil and Australia. And, with a company that does as big as they are, soon to be $1 trillion market cap, I should be able to click a button and just be everywhere. And it's such a pain in the ass.
That's amazing. It's amazing. What sound or noise do you love?
As dumb as it is, I have my Shopify app on my phone. And whenever there's a sale, I get a cha-ching.
Oh, fantastic. Okay. Yes.
And I'm like, stop what you're doing. I just got a sale. I love it. That's my favorite thing.
And so you don't turn your phone off at night for that reason?
No, I try not to. I have it off right now, which is really hard for me. It'd be great if somebody ordered right now.
It's very Pavlovian, isn't it? When you get that ting and you get that rush of excitement.
Yeah, that's. I don't need likes or shares on Facebook. I like the cha-ching.
That's the real thing. So what sound or noise do you hate?
I don't know. I don't really have too many sounds or noises that I hate. Little yippy barking dogs drive me crazy. There's a lot of them in my apartment building. I got a nice big
proper sized dog there. Yes.
He's sleeping, but he's my boy.
Chief advisor.
Yeah, he's my chief advisor. The little yippy dogs, I hate that.
So what is your favorite curse word?
I love the F word, man. You know, I can say whole sentences with just that.
Yeah, you're not alone, because it is such a flexible word. It's a noun, it's an adjective, it's a verb. So
yeah, it's everything you need it to be.
It is the universal expletive. So you're not alone there. So what profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
I'm actually getting my captain's license. I want to learn to fly airplanes and helicopters. I love driving aggressively.
Yes.
But as a profession, I am working on another patent, so I'm filing that. I don't know other profession. I mean, I would love to just be a consultant eventually. I mean, I feel like I have knowledge. It's easier to sit on the backside. I mean, my wife is starting a fitness website, and it's easy for me to say, "Oh, you should do this.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just tell them, you know, make a suggestion. If she wants to do it, great. If she doesn't, that's fine. But I've done so many different businesses that I have a way of looking at things. I think that a little unique than.
Yeah, I can see that, absolutely. So what profession would you not like to attempt?
I cannot do 9 to 5. I can't work for somebody else. I mean, truth be told, my dad and I, him and I didn't have a problem, but his business, his jewelry business, was his baby. And we just said, you know what, let's stay father and son and go my way. So
let's stay related, Dad. But listen, you know, everyone knows. Entrepreneurs are congenitally unemployable. So that should be no surprise.
Yeah, I love the Instagram thing I always see. I'd rather hustle for 80 hours a week than work for somebody else 40 hours a week. I mean, the stress of not knowing where the next dollar's coming from is a motivator. Being in LA, to me, seeing, you know, coming from Milwaukee, some people have money, but it's very conservative money there. You might have a big house and nice stuff in the house, but people really don't flaunt it there. Out here, it's flaunted. And you either are motivated by that or totally turned off, and I'm motivated. So I love seeing that. That drives me. That's, I mean, obviously being successful and all the stress has got to be, you know, there's got to be some payoff at some point.
Definitely. So if heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
You know, at the end of the day, I'm not a very religious person. I think I'm spiritual, or I believe that there's stuff out there. To me, I'm just be the best person that I can be, you know, and I help people that I probably shouldn't. I have been absolutely screwed over financially by a lot of people. And at the end of the day, I won't stop that. I want to be the best person I can be. And if I can help somebody, I'm absolutely going to do it. And that's all I can do. So if he says, you know, thanks, or, you know, you helped a lot of people, or, you know, I don't need to be known for changing the dress shirt, but being known for helping other businesses or helping other people that are in need, you know, that's kind of more about it for me.
Oh, fabulous. That's brilliant. Well, Rob, I can't begin to tell you how much of a pleasure it's been talking to you. How do people get hold of you? How do they find out more about Million Dollar Collar? How do they follow you? How do they get hold of these great things you're doing?
Well, there was nobody else named Million Dollar Collar, so we're pretty set up with that. So, you know, Facebook and Instagram, it's at Million Dollar Collar. Website's milliondollarcollar.com. And my email personal is rob@milliondollarcollar.com. So if there's anything I can do to, you know, guide you on the patent process or sales or any of that stuff, I've been through it all, and the patent is gnarly. So I'm happy to help out.
That's fabulous. Rob, well, thank you once again. And, you know, I look forward to seeing you again soon.
All right. Sounds good, Matthew. Thank you.